I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We know the past several months have been hard for many Vermonters, many of whom are struggling with unemployment or lower than normal employment. We've been doing shows on gardening and cooking and ways to find your own food or perhaps make a budget stretch. One of the ways that many Vermonters are thinking about doing that this year and many years is by hunting. And Fish and Wildlife Commissioner Lewis Porter told MyNBC5 that hunting licenses were up 20% for the year just through the month of June. There are, of course, the many folks who don't buy their license until the night before they plan to go out, so we're looking at the potential for thousands more hunters in Vermont this year, which may mean more venison, duck, goose, bear, moose, and other game meat on Vermonters' tables this fall and winter. So today we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about how to properly process and cook wild game. We're joined now by Jeff Whipple, a game warden in central Vermont and an avid wild game chef. Jeff, thank you very much for talking with us.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So do you have a favorite thing to cook? I mean, I'm not sure what exactly you hunt or what meat you have, you know, in your chest freezer, but do you have favorite meat, favorite game meat?
Sure. So I think I'm going to probably talk a little bit about black bears.
Mm-hmm.
And can you hear me okay?
You sound great, Jeff.
Okay, great. So it's probably no surprise to our listeners that here in Vermont we have a growing and expanding black bear population. First let me back up a little bit about how to get game meat outside of hunting. So if you're a Vermont resident, we can provide Vermont residents with roadkill or sometimes illegally taken game through through our warden service. To get that, you call your local game warden. So wherever you live in the state, you'll have a local game warden. And our numbers are posted right on our website and in the back of our Fish and Wildlife Digest. So we give out deer and bear and things that are hit so they don't go to waste. But I'll talk a little bit about black bears, and I know we're kind of on limited time, but black bear is a wonderful, wonderful animal where you can make so many different things out of. We make a lot of sausage, my favorite, probably I wrote a couple of notes down here, so my favorite is black bear hams.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, I love smoking, and I love running my smokehouse or smoker, and my favorite black bear ham is a nice brined ham. It's a trimmed up ham. It's the rear hind quarter muscle off of our black bear. I do a nice brine, which I can post up that brine recipe after the show. So I'll brine my hams for about 7 to 10 days. Depends on if you're using an injector or if you're So I'm just brining them in your soak brine. If you use an injector, you can go less than 7 days. And the wonderful part about the injector is you can get really deep, especially if it's a big bear. If you have a bear that's over 300 pounds, then you want to get that brine really saturating in there.
And Jeff, do you brine it because the meat is, you know, tough and this is a good way to sort of address that? I mean, is black bear meat, does it tend to be a little bit chewy?
Yeah. So when you talk to, growing up, I remember never really bear hunting and never, and we didn't really have the population of bears either. But when you talk to somebody and say, oh, you know, what about bear meat or would you kill a bear? They would say, oh my gosh, I had it once and it was awful and I wouldn't feed it to my dog. Well, with that, that's all in how you prepare it. So yes, it can be tough, especially if you were to kind of slice off a steak like you were a beef or a moose or something like that, and you throw that steak on the grill, it can be very, very tough. If you have some time to eat your steak, then I'd recommend doing that. If you want to make the best out of your product, I would go with brine or a marinade or a sausage. The sausage is a ground meat product where you can really expand on your different seasonings. If you want to do a hot Italian sausage or some really kind of cool artesian stuff with bears, it's wonderful because they usually, especially the fall time of the year, they have a lot of fat on them, so you don't have to supplement the meat with anything like a pork fat or a beef fat. So with the brine, I base my brine at the maple syrup, brown sugar, coriander type brine. So you can get tons of different brine ideas online, you know, from different like hams and from domestic pigs, that is. But and then I'll smoke them, and I make a maple syrup honey brown sugar glaze that goes on them. So I glaze these hams. I'll end up cooking them for anywhere. It depends on the size of the bear, but I'll start my smoker at about 175, and I'll bring that smoker up as that ham is kind of coming up to temperature. And then when I get the ham coming up into the 100-ish degree range, I'll turn that smoker right up to about 225, and then I'll let it run for sometimes it takes 10 hours if it's a great big bear. What I'll do with that ham after is when I pull it. So the big thing, let me back up with bears a little bit. The big thing with bears is no matter what kind of cut you're cooking, we want to make sure that final product is at 160 degrees. We mm-hmm. know that bears will carry trichinosis. Not that we've had many positive cases of that, but it is something that a bear can carry. It is dangerous for humans, but certainly don't let that shy somebody away from wanting to cook bear meat. But as long as it's at 160, we know trichinosis dies at 137 degrees Fahrenheit. So at 160, we're plenty safe. We're finishing it up on the smoker. Take it off the smoker. I'll pull it for usually 20 to 25 minutes to let it rest. And every 5 minutes, I'm putting that glaze right on there. It's soaking that Vermont maple, you know, wonderful flavor. And then the honey, it's pulling that in. It makes a really nice sticky glaze. It's a great product, and it's a wonderful way to use a bear that you harvest or maybe one you get from the Warden Service.
Jeff, a lot of what you've been talking about with bear meat seems to sort of like run parallel to how people might process and then cook different parts of a pig. Are they fairly similar in both sort of the way the meat can be cooked and also in flavor profiles? Because, I mean, you're talking about sausage, you talk about ham, you talk about, you know, the various ways that people might be thinking about pork.
Yeah, I think so what I actually do with a lot of my recipes is I'll convert them from I'll use the exact same recipe from a domestic pig. It comes out, it's going to be a little, you know, it's a red meat, so it's going to be a little thicker, darker. It's going to be a little tougher. It's going to be a little more gamey flavor, which I think is wonderful. If I had to put a Vermont black bear ham next to a Vermont organic raised pig ham, I would choose black bear 100% of the time. And I raise my own pigs too, so I know.
So you're not biased.
I know the difference pretty quite well, but if you're looking up, different recipes, especially for different cuts, you can do pretty much anything with a pig you could do with a bear, including ribs. You can actually cut bear ribs that very closely mimic a nice baby back or a St. Louis cut.
Listeners, if you have a question about cooking game meat and you want to ask Jeff about a specific cut that you're interested in not ruining, or if you want to share some advice with us and some recipe ideas for wild game cooking, give us a call. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you could send an email to vermontedition@vpr.org. Oopie writes in to say, I'm a first-year hunter at 37, and I got a doe during the novice/kids weekend. Made a venison Wellington from part of the backstrap. Very rewarding, very tasty. And Oopie says, I used Joshua Wiseman's recipe from YouTube with a couple of tweaks. Gabby writes in to say, for those who might be eating wild game for the first time or eating more of it than they're used to, grinding the meat into Hamburg is a great way to reduce gaminess and make it more versatile. And I will admit to making a lot of venison chili when we have venison in our freezer. So, yeah, that ground meat comes in pretty handy. Let's go to Allie, who's calling in from Richmond. Hi, Allie. Go right ahead.
Hi there. I just bought some deer loin steak from the Warren store in Warren, Vermont. And I have never cooked it before. I just read online that, you know, it can be particularly tender if it's young, but I have no idea, obviously, how old it is. It says it was farmed. deer at a local ranch near Warren. And I'm wondering when, and it's about an inch thick, and the steak is about maybe 9 inches by about 4 inches in dimension, and it's really dark red. There's no bone in it. And I'm wondering, is it closest to like a T-bone or like a New York strip or like a fillet? And you know, what temperature can I finish it at? Like, can I have it medium rare, or what do you recommend as far as safety and taste?
Thanks for the question, Ali. Yeah, Jeff, I have ruined a venison steak myself. So how can we make sure to help Ali not ruin one?
Yeah, so we'll say, so it's a loin steak. So if you were to kind of put that in conversion of where is that position on a beef? So we can buy beef loin and we can buy pig loin, pork loin. The loin, what we call as hunters, is the back strap. So we're looking at, you know, the second tenderest part of the animal. My go-to, so if I'm going to cook some deer loin, I'm going to go to cast iron all day, and the grill is good. It's easy to overdo them on the grill, especially because their venison is a really lean meat. There's not a lot of fat on it, so it's you know, a lot of our flavor comes in that. So you got to supplement a little bit for fat. So cast iron, we actually just cooked some last night. So cast iron is a great go-to. You can get that pan really up there in heat. Probably shy away from using an olive oil, unless it's an original olive oil. Extra virgin has a pretty high smoke point, so mm-hmm. you'll be kind of filling your house or something, or wherever you're cooking, with a little bit of smoke in it, and it creates kind of a bitter flavor. So high heat, sear on each side. So a little sea salt on top of that. A big thing I see a lot of is if the steak is not dry, so pat that dry with paper towel or towel. You want to have it nice and dry because you're trying to make that crust. So you're heating up. I'd go with a vegetable oil or original olive oil. Get that up nice and hot. Plop that steak on there. Listen to that sizzle. Hear that sizzle for 45 seconds. Flip it over. Same thing. Then lower your heat down. Lower that heat down to about a medium, maybe even a low medium. Throw in some whole cloves of garlic. I smash them up a little bit so you get that release of flavor. 2 sprigs of rosemary, and then a bunch of pads of butter. So I will put butter in there and let that kind of just fry. Release that rosemary, release that garlic flavor. I mean, it gets underneath the steak, and you're flipping it every couple of minutes, every 3-4 minutes. You're going to flip it over. It's going to get that medium heat. If you have a thermometer, you want to internal check that. If you're looking for about 135 or so, and that's going to be safe. 130 would be fine on venison, but just to actually be safe, maybe hit a 135 and then pull it off. Let it rest. The big thing is letting steaks rest. I think that one of the biggest mistakes you can make is pulling that and slicing it up and you know, just going to town on it. If it sits there uncovered, don't tinfoil tent it. Just let it rest for 10 minutes. Those juices are going to pull back in. That steak's going to tighten. When you slice that down, you're going to have a wonderful loin venison cut.
Yeah, 10 minutes. That's a lot of patience, Jeff. I'm not sure all of us have that much patience to wait that long.
Try and do your side dishes at the same time, because I'm telling you, if you're staring at that steak and smelling it, it's going to be a long 10 minutes.
Well, good luck with Ali with your venison. Jeff, is there a difference in flavor that people will recognize from farm-raised venison to wild?
It depends on their diet. Yeah, probably. So our farm-raised species of deer are much larger deer. They're not whitetail here in Vermont. We can't have captive whitetail. So the deer that we're farm-raising are red deer or an elk species. And they're also getting supplemental feed, so that feed you know, contains either grain or corn or something like that. So there is going to be a different flavor profile, but you know, it's still good stuff, and it's good local organic protein in the most part. Yeah.
Let's go to Jim, who's calling in from Norwich. Hi, Jim. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jim Cardinelli. Many years ago in the 70s, I got my first bear. I didn't know what to do with it. And so I drove over to Stowe to visit a friend named Annabelle Moriarty, who was famous for the Moriarty hats. And she was in her 70s at the time. I said, Annabelle, what do I do with this critter? And she said, well, God, my husband catches them all the time. They're awful. She says, what you do is you cut off the hindquarter and you soak it in Coca-Cola and some wine. I went, really? Of course, I had the same reaction as you just did. So I soaked it. I soaked it in Coca-Cola for a couple days, a little wine, and then I roasted it. And I'll tell you, I brought it to my dad's house, and he and his friends, we all had that, and we didn't know. It was so good. It was incredible. We had no idea what we were eating, but what a flavor. So there you go. Annabelle Moriarty is no longer around, but she was famous for the Moriarty hats, which back in the 70s were on the U.S. ski team and all of us. So good luck. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Sounds like Annabelle was multi-talented. Hats and good bear meat recipes. Let's talk now with David Macklem, who actually runs his own butchering service and has a weigh station. Hi, David. Nice to talk with you.
Yes, hi.
And you're in Bradford, right?
Yes.
So, you know, I mentioned at the beginning of this segment that Lewis Porter, the commissioner of the Fish and Wildlife Department, said that just even as of June, hunting licenses were up 20% over the last year. And so Fish and Wildlife is expecting a pretty big turnout, certainly for deer season, but also perhaps for other things. What are you seeing so far at your weigh station?
Well, exactly that. A very large turnout. There seems to be a lot more youth hunters hunting this year, as well as novice, like you were saying earlier. With the change of our seasons, there's a lot more people getting out and staying out in the woods a lot longer. So yes, my reporting is probably double to where it normally should be at this point in time.
Double. Wow, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Do you attribute some of that to new rules around crossbows?
Absolutely. There's been, in my mind, three major rule changes. The crossbow was one, the length of the archery season, and our early muzzleloader season, which is a 4-day season for does only. All three of those have really escalated the kill this year so far.
Jeff, does that surprise you or sound just about right to hear that David's seeing about double at his reporting station in Bradford?
I think it sounds about right. When we know, you know, our new seasons, this is something brand new. We've never had that early antlerless muzzleloader. That's a new season. And then the extended bow season. Typically, we're in years past, our deer season would be closed right now if this was last year. So our archery season is open, and it stays open until the only time it's going to close is the 16-day rifle hunting season. So there's a lot of opportunity to get out and fill those tags that you purchased. And it's not surprising. It's what the big game plan is designed to do. Our new big game plan. Was looking at, you know, revamping some of our old stuff, and it seems to be well on course with it.
David, you also process meat that you get from hunters. Are you seeing a lot of maybe new, first-time, or less experienced hunters who are asking you to process their meat? What are they asking for?
Yes, all the above. I think for what I've seen so far, it has actually been in the youth category. There's a lot more youth archery hunting because of the use of crossbows now. The novice has certainly been a big influx of people. It just, in general, I think with the economy right now too, people are tending to maybe to go out and try to harvest their own meat a little more than they have in years past.
And in terms of what they're asking for, and you know, in terms of cuts, are people asking for a lot of specialty cuts, or are they just saying, here's my deer, you know, process it for me?
No, everybody has specific stuff they like. One of my first questions on the butchering side of it is, what do you guys eat? Just because choices are out there, such as the loins or just even burgers and roast. If you don't eat it, don't get it. Put it in something you do eat. A lot of people do generally steaks. My sausages, I have 9 different types of sausage mixes that I mix up for people. That's extremely big. People diversify that into a lot of their pasta meals, or just making burgers. Like it was mentioned earlier, how you can change the gaminess of it by grinding it. Mm-hmm. Which is true. You can add a lot of stuff to it. to change it. And it's used in a lot of dishes.
What do you put into your, you said you have 9 different sausage mixes. What do you put into your sausage that somebody might like?
Oh, all the above, from mild breakfast mixes. I have an awesome maple mix. It consists of maple syrup, molasses, and a whole bunch of spices, so it's a very sweet mix, as well as getting to some of the southern spices, Cajun, chorizo, they're slightly on the hotter side. It's all what a person's palate, what they're used to, what they want to try. And a lot of people will try 2 or 3 or 4 different types, even in one deer, to give them the choice of throughout the year trying different stuff.
What's your favorite thing to cook, David, in terms of wild game?
Actually, to be honest, probably like a neck roast.
Of a deer? Are you talking venison here?
Yes. Yeah, you start something like that in the morning, let it slow cook in a crock pot with vegetables. By the nighttime when you get home, the meat's all falling apart like a pulled pork does. It's very, very tasty. But I love all the wild game part too. So it's hard to say what's the best type, but it's all very good.
Are you going to be able to keep up with the demand? If you're seeing double the number of people coming into your reporting station, you know, it's not necessarily double the number who are going to be asking you to process their deer, but can you hold up to all of the hunting all the hunters that are coming in with deer this year?
That's the million-dollar question. So far, even what I've butchered has been double what I normally should be doing.
Wow.
So I have a lot of help that helps me throughout the day and stuff, as well as into the evening. So we're keeping up with it right now, but when rifle season starts, we'll see if it continues to stay on that pace or if it levels back out. But right now, things are very busy.
Well, thank you for taking a moment to talk with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you.
That's David Macklem, who runs a reporting station in Bradford and also processes meat. We're having a cooking show today and focusing on how to prepare wild game. Jeff, I don't know how much you cook duck, goose, other fowl, but do you have any advice for people who may be trying to put something wild on their plates this Thanksgiving?
Yeah, so... And we'll even expand that into a wild turkey if you happen to have been lucky enough to harvest a wild turkey this spring or this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful table fare. It's pretty traditional as far as the original Thanksgivings go. One thing I would watch, and I'm speaking this from prior experiences that I've had, if you grind any of those animals as far as waterfowl or things that you might harvest with a shotgun, really want to inspect those pieces that you're going to grind through your grinder and really watch for some shot that might be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've ran shot through my grinding knives before on my grinder, and it does a number on those, as well as your fragmenting small pieces of metal into your meat, which you don't want to do. One of my favorite, and actually my college roommate and one of my best friends introduced me to this, is a big waterfowl hunter. It's a super simple duck or goose recipe, and it's cubed duck or goose breast. It's just about maybe 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch cubes, wrapped in bacon, a little garlic salt on top, and then put in your oven for 10-15 minutes on 325. That comes out. You can hit them with the broiler at the end. It'll crisp the top of that bacon up so wonderfully. And it's got that flavor of garlic salt. You've got that smokiness from the bacon, and it makes a wonderful product, because a lot of our ducks, especially, are quite small. So you can get a little more return out of that than just pan frying a single duck breast. But that being said, too, most professional chefs know the value of duck fat. So rendering that and using duck fat is a wonderful tool, too.
We usually breast out our turkeys, and I have struggled to keep them from drying out. Do you have any advice if people are doing turkey breast, wild turkey breast for Thanksgiving or for, you know, whenever, to make sure that they're getting the most out of that flavor?
Yeah, it's tough. I'm right there with you. Outside of maybe a deep frying, I've done that once. I haven't done it again, but even that was pretty dry. I think the best is maybe make like a crock pot turkey dish, you know, some sort of base, whether it be cream of mushroom or something like that, and then vegetables, and making that slow cooked crock pot dish, because you're right, wild turkey is very fast to dry out. I haven't tried. I do have one in the freezer that I harvested. I haven't tried what I want to, but it's one of the oven bags. Supposedly that keeps, I've talked to some buddies about that, and that keeps the moisture in, you know, when you're going to whole roast that bird, if you plucked it, or maybe you just have the turkey breast itself.
Yeah, we often hear as well about the benefits of sous-viding your, you know, having some extra technology around to sous-vide your venison or your turkey, and that's not something we've tried either.
Many of our game wardens are into that, and you'll find most game wardens have a freezer with unique things as far as different animals that we have either picked up or, you know, butchered for our own selves, or, you know, maybe part of it and then donated the other part. So a lot of our wardens are using sous vide cookers, and it's a technology I haven't got into yet, but my brother's into it, and a bunch of the folks that I work with are.
Let's go to Jeannie in Burlington. Hi, Jeannie. Go right ahead.
Hi. I don't have a recipe, but I can tell you that some of the best spaghetti sauce that I was ever served was moose meatballs.
And you know how they were made?
I don't. It's been many, many years.
But moose meatballs, it was a memorable enough meal that you still remember it.
Yep, I would put that right up there with your chili.
Oh, great. Jeannie, thanks for that. Appreciate it. Dave is on the line with us from St. Johnsbury. Hi, Dave. What about you?
Hi. I haven't hunted in years, but when I used to hunt with my uncles, they would field dress the deer and bring the liver back immediately to eat. That was the first thing they ate in hunting camp. And I don't really remember it. I wish I did. But I wonder if many people might just discard that, and it was delicious.
Oh, I appreciate hearing that and the memories that you must have of hunting camp. Thanks, Dave. Evan is calling in from Lindenville. Hi, Evan. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great, thanks. What about you? What are you cooking?
Yeah, so I just had a comment on the wild turkey. I came across this a couple years ago, and I won't do wild turkey any other way. So what you do is you take any part of the turkey, specifically the turkey breast, and you hammer it flat, and you season it, and you know, dredge it in some breadcrumbs, and you pan fry it just like a turkey schnitzel.
Huh. And you think that holds the moisture in, keeps it pretty good?
Yeah, it does really well. It keeps the pieces of meat really thin, and it just only takes a few seconds to fry up, and it's crispy. And you squeeze a little lemon on there, and it's quite the crowd pleaser.
Evan, thank you for that tip. I really appreciate it. Let's get another voice in here as well. Shane Rogers is the Farm-to-Plate Communications Manager for the Vermont Sustainable Jobs Fund and is working with the Fish and Wildlife Department on a video series called Vermont Wild Kitchen, which showcases recipes that includes food that are wild, foraged, hunted, and fished. Hi, Shane. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, we've been talking about some of the different types of game that people might be cooking and some of the ways they might be cooking it. But there's also, of course, side dishes. And before we get into some other things with you, do you have any advice for what Vermonters might also be able to either forage or wildcraft or get locally that would pair really well with some of the dishes we've been hearing about?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the beautiful things about wild game is just how wonderful it pairs with all that Vermont fresh farm food that is being grown throughout the state. And I mean, you can go just about anywhere here in the state and hit up a farm stand. There's local food at your grocery stores, but pairing it with, you know, venison tacos with some Vermont slaw that you make up in quick pickle. I always like to do mashed potatoes with the venison backstrap, but really any time of the year is a good opportunity to incorporate some of those Vermont fresh foods into the wild game dishes that you're making too.
Shane, you're working on this series, the video series, Vermont Wild Kitchen. What is it that you're trying to convey to Vermonters? Just new skills or, you know, a new idea about how to work with and harvest from the landscape around us? I mean, what are you hoping for?
For the Vermont Wild Kitchen, what we're really trying to showcase is that this local food movement that so many people have heard about really involves so many different things that are not just $15 hamburgers and $10 beers, right? Vermonters have been doing local food for generations, and that includes hunting and fishing and foraging. And what we really want to be able to do is just show how accessible wild food is and how easily it pairs up with all that other delicious food that's being produced right here in the state. So part of the episode is really just featuring amateur home chefs in their kitchen. I know I did a couple episodes where I put the camera up on top of my fridge, and we're just kind of beaming into people's homes with these simple recipes that show that not only is wild game not that scary to deal with, but just how easy it is to kind of whip up a...
Oh, we lost Shane there for a second, but I think we get what you were saying and where you were going with that. Let's go to Nancy in Waitsfield. Hi, Nancy. Go right ahead. You've got some tips for us?
Hi, Jane. Thanks a lot. This is just a terrific show. And I just to start off with, I just want you to know I enjoyed leftover backstrap from my deer that I took last fall for lunch. And this, as far as I wanted to say something about if you're a beginner cooking for wild game, is don't overthink it. It really can be simple. We do a lot of grilling of tenderloins, steaks, and backstraps, and cook them on high for only with Montreal steak seasoning, and just on high, flip them 2 to 3 minutes, and then let them sit. And when we bring them back in to eat, it doesn't have to be real complicated or threatening. And aside from the neck roast, you can also do shanks in the slow cooker. I have a lamb shank recipe that I found somewhere that I substitute the deer shanks for, and it is absolutely outstanding. We do all our own butchering and add about 5 to 10% maple bacon into our burger when we grind it, so it has a nice little aroma of maple when we do it,
and some fat, Nancy, right?
Yeah, a little bit of fat. Yeah, otherwise it's way, way too dry. And lastly, when turkey and duck, I plucked one wild turkey or one wild one goose, and I swore I'd never do it again. So we breast them out, and the legs we cook in a slow cooker with vegetables and make a pot pie out of them.
That sounds delicious.
It really is. And by the way, anything like that, a little sherry always adds a nice touch to the flavor of things. So,
well, Nancy, thank you. Thanks for those recommendations and ideas for a couple different kinds of meals we can make. You know, Shane Rogers, when we think about the ways that we're cooking these days and how many of us are trying to stretch a buck and think sustainably and responsibly about how we're eating and what we're eating, do you see more people turning to, I mean, I guess we could call it sort of traditional ways of thinking about food and our relationship to the land? Do you see people utilizing Vermont Wild Kitchen and thinking differently about how to harvest and kill and prepare their own food?
Yes, absolutely. I think the pandemic has really shined a spotlight on what is on people's plates, and people are diving into this in new ways that we just haven't seen before. So all of these great resources are out there, and we've been seeing people tune into Vermont Wild Kitchen. I know that the Vermont Fish and Wildlife has been putting on some amazing seminars, like a deer processing seminar, and folks are really figuring out, you know, what is available to them on this working landscape. So it's been a really wonderful experience to see people kind of pairing what we love about Vermont and then discovering new things to love about it as well.
And Jeff, to Shane's point, you know, there are ways for people to learn how to process their own meat, but if they can't get to one of the classes, which happened earlier on, where should they best learn about how to do that?
Sure. So I've YouTubed the wonderful thing. we are doing the butchering seminars taught by Warden Abigail Sarah at Rutland County, and they're limited, obviously, due to COVID issues, limited attendance availability. But YouTube is a wonderful place. There's so many different, avenues to go down when even cutting up a simple deer. There's so many different ways to do it, but I've struggled my way through a few different artisanal cuts before, where I've had my laptop on in my meat shop watching, going, okay, well, how did he do that again? So, yeah.
Although I would recommend, if you're going to be hunting out where there's no reception, watch your YouTube videos on field dressing before you go out, because you don't want to get stuck out in the wilderness without your YouTube. Jeff Whipple is a game warden in central Vermont and an avid wild game chef. Thank you very much for talking with us, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
And Shane Rogers is the Farm to Plate Communications Manager for the Vermont Sustainable Jobs Fund. We'll link to Vermont Wild Kitchen on our website, vpr.org. Shane, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.